Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Two murders, a disgraced lawyer, a high-profile trial, and one clerk of court who couldn't wait for her 15 minutes of fame. Will this woman's relentless pursuit of a lake house mean a potential murderer walks free? This week's episode is Alec Murdoch Gets a New Trial.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you.
This motherfucking... motherfucking clerk
lady,
like
Becky.
I haven't disliked a Becky this much since the one with the good hair.
Yeah, right.
How I did not realize until this episode how egregious the jury tampering was. At the time when it first kind of leaked, we were like, it seems like something they're just trying to get a retrial. I mean, I do believe he killed his wife and kid. I also think he was not entitled to a fair trial, even though they got the sentence right. The trial was fucked because of her.
Yeah, he was totally entitled to it and just didn't get one. And that's the danger of this stuff. You're like, they got, like, if you would have just got out of the way, they probably would have gotten it right. Like, we'll talk about the nitty-gritties. Yeah. Like, lady, just shut up.
It's having no faith that, like, the common person mm-hmm. is smart enough to make a decision on their own, which is kind of the whole reason we have the jury system in the first place.
And having no ethics, because it wasn't like, you know, Maggie Murdoch was my friend and I want to see this son of a bitch mm-hmm. go down. It was like, I got to make a little money off of this. And it's like, lady, there's dead bodies at the issue here. Like, come on. And fuck you for making us on Alec Murdoch's side. You know, at first you hear the appeal.
I'm still not on his side.
I'm on his side constitutionally because I do think the Supreme Court got it right. And you read it and you go, yeah, he does deserve a new trial. Damn it.
And God, now we all have to sit through this again. His family that isn't, he didn't murder, has to go through it all again, as does Maggie's family and a whole new set of jurors. That's like a whole new set of jurors that are traumatized by mm-hmm. what they hear, what they see, taxpayers' money, paying for this formerly rich piece of shit, still currently a piece of shit, formerly rich.
Broke piece of shit now, but
it's, you know, and I mean, I guess like, okay, maybe it comes back. He didn't do it. He's still in prison for his financial crime. So at the end of the day, what was the point? You're still going to be in prison. I mean, I get it. You want to clear your name. But what was, we'll get to it. It makes you think, if she did this with this case, what mm-hmm. other cases has she done it with? And how often just in courtrooms does this happen?
Right? It makes you think of that How to Fix a Drug Scandal on Netflix where mm-hmm. it was like, well, this one was, the results were lied about. That means all 700 other cases this lab worked on has to be relooked at. So yeah, I imagine if you had Becky Hill as your clerk of court, you might be curious as to what she might have said. In this case, I think she was driven by fame, attention, which the amount of, it's just so, it is egregious. The behavior is wild. We'll talk about it, but it's also so embarrassing and cringy that you really did want to ride these people's lifeless corpses to what you thought was going to be your fame and fortune. And it's like a sickness. It's a gross, weird sickness at the core of it. Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah, to look at the worst thing that's ever happened to this family and see their grieving loved ones in that courtroom. And then you're like, well, they better give him a guilty verdict because I'm trying to get a lake house. And that's not even a that's not even hyperbole. Like, that's literally what she wanted. And to be able to be so callous, especially given your job, I mean, if I had gotten a guilty verdict and she was my clerk, I'd be like, lawyers, I'd like for this to be reexamined.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a look through these files, but we'll break down the whole Supreme Court appeal for you all, and we hope you tuned in to our 2023 trial recap. Like I said, listening to it, you're like, in 2023, we're like, that's slam dunk. They got it right, because we had no idea that this one lady was, and we'll see why, and it was because she was worried, I think, about a hung jury, kind of Karen Reed style, that there might be one or two holdouts, and it's like, it is what it is then. If there's one or two holdouts, there's one or two holdouts.
And that's like, what happens.
Yeah, you can't control it. No. But she thought she could. She thought she could control it. Becky, you cannot.
I think, I forgot, I counted yesterday. I want to say this is the eighth or ninth episode we've done on him. Because we did like a four-parter when it first happened.
Yeah, I think three. And then
we covered it like three two updates.
Yeah.
On Patreon. And then another update. And it's just this trial has been around for so long, and the fact that it's like now gonna happen all again is just wild.
Well, and someone's like, I feel like if he was not a rich lawyer white guy, probably we would not, like, you know what I mean, we wouldn't be going through all the things that we're going through. But there's that factor, and the fact that they were well known and all the eyes were on this trial and it's happening. So it's kind of this, you know, the snake that eats its own tail. It's like keeps adding to it. So let's hope the next clerk of court keep her fucking mouth shut.
Yeah
man. Well, before we get into it, we got some stuff to tell you all about.
Oh yeah,
not just Crime Wave at Sea, which you all know
we are gonna plug that
to the 12th. You gotta come on the ship with us. But we have a new fun thing we're doing on Sunday Scaries on Sunday nights. If you have not joined us, that's our free live stream. Anybody can join, just put in your email. But now, if you do want to check out stuff like all of our Murdoch stuff we talked about, or our new minisode on the UAP disclosure, or our most recent bonus content, and you're not quite sure, we're doing 50% off your first month of Patreon, but it's a special code you only get during Sunday Scaries. So tune in at Sunday Scaries. We make up the code. Last week it was Spatchcock. Shout out for everybody that voted on that. Why was it? I don't know. It's a fun word we like. So it's like Pee Wee Herman's secret word. So come decide the secret word, and then you can use the secret word for 50% off your first month's membership. And then if you stick around for a year, you get a month free as well. So do all that, but come see us Sunday nights, 8:30 Central.
And the discount code is good for 24 hours. So once the chat and everybody picks it, we put it up there, and it's good for 24 hours. So yeah, you got to be there, and then you get to reap the benefits in many ways. In many ways.
Hell yeah, be there. There's so many benefits. You all are the true benefits. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh man, but in the meantime, there's no benefit to what this dumb bitch did.
No. I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. On the warm evening of June 7th, 2021, Maggie Murdoch and her younger son, Paul, were found shot to death at their family's sprawling rural hunting estate in Colleton County, South Carolina. The brutal killing sent shockwaves through the South Carolina Lowcountry, where the Murdoch name had been synonymous with legal power and prominence for generations. Alec Murdoch, husband, father, and scion of a dynasty of prominent attorneys, claimed to have discovered the bodies and denied any involvement in their deaths, a position he maintains to this day.
Which is why they were vigorously appealing, because he still maintains his innocence.
Over a year after the slayings, on July 14th, 2022, a grand jury indicted Alec Murdoch on two counts of murder for the deaths of his wife and son. By this point, Murdoch's life had already begun to unravel in spectacular fashion. He had been disbarred, accused of stealing millions of dollars from clients, and publicly exposed as a man living a double life of financial fraud and opioid addiction. The indictment set the stage for what would become one of the most watched criminal trials in South Carolina history.
Man, just people lining up in front. Mm-hmm. I remember Anjanette Levy was always getting windblown from Law and Crime Network in her little folding chair. People were just out there, I mean, for weeks at a time.
We were glued to it as well. Mm-hmm. It was televised. Emily D. Baker did a wonderful job of covering it. I'm sure she will do so again with this, and I'll be tuning in to that too.
It's my favorite way to watch.
The trial began on January 23rd, 2023, drawing national media attention and crowding the small courthouse in Walterboro, South Carolina. Presiding over jury management and courtroom logistics was Rebecca Becky Hill, the elected clerk of court for Colleton County. Her role placed her in an unusually intimate position with the jury. She was, in effect, their primary caretaker throughout the six-week proceedings.
And it's like not just some random bailiff or just a random like admin assistant walking by going, you know, he did it. It's like the lady that they go to be like, can we have lunch? How do we vote on this? Where do we put our codes?
Yeah. No, it'd be like if you had a babysitter and you're like asking them like, I don't know, what should we do? I'm not the one in charge. And they're like, oh, you should probably just go take your parents' car and run around the neighborhood. And you're like, I guess the person in charge told us to do that.
Like, you got elected by us, so yeah.
What the public did not yet know was that Hill had other ambitions beyond her official duties. According to findings later confirmed by jurors' testimony and reaffirmed by the South Carolina Supreme Court, Hill had repeatedly told colleagues that a guilty verdict
would be the best way to sell books.
And that she needed the money for a lake house. She was already planning to write a memoir about the trial.
And this was like, she was real antsy up until, well, here, President's Day is like when, that is right when the defense started presenting its case in chief. So I think she was cooling her jets during the state's presentation of the evidence. But as soon as it was time for the defense to start, I think she started getting amped up and was like, I really got to make sure that whatever the defense says doesn't land.
Yeah. And she had already made it up in her mind that like, this is my plan.
Yeah,
like without even the trial being finished, she started this case probably before the jury was even selected of like, this is going to be it. This is the most high profile case we've ever seen. This is going to be how I retire. And that's fucking sick.
Yeah, you're right. I think it was because he was indicted July of 2022. And I believe a fellow clerk of court testified that Becky told her as of like Thanksgiving 2022, like this, how I'm about to get my lake house. So this was like in her mind, her plan. And she was waiting for the defense to start their case in chief on President's Day, right after the President's Day holiday.
Following a President's Day recess, Hill's conduct around the jury reportedly became more aggressive. She began entering jury rooms more frequently. She allegedly warned jurors not to be
fooled, confused, or thrown off
by the defense. Language that struck at the very heart of a defendant's right to present their case to an impartial panel. Hill also began holding repeated private conversations with the jury foreperson, sometimes slipping away into a single occupancy bathroom, away from any oversight. She reportedly instructed other jurors not to ask about those conversations, raising a wall of secrecy around her communications with the one person who would later guide deliberations.
This is so...
it's so bananas.
It's beyond anything. And in fact, in the Supreme Court decision, they were like listing other similar cases. And in those cases, it would be like a bailiff said one thing and that was enough to overturn it. Or someone said one thing. There was no other case where someone was meddling to the extent that this woman was meddling.
No. And... it's a bummer that at that moment, the foreperson wasn't like, well, I got to go tell the judge or somebody what's going on. Maybe you feel like you're like, she works here. She's sworn in. This must be how things go.
Yeah, that's what it is she took such advantage of her position of authority that any of the jurors, including the foreperson, are kind of like, well, this must be what happens is they coach us. Yeah. They help us out. But no, they do not. They're not supposed to say anything at all. They're supposed to make sure, in fact, you don't say anything to anybody.
Yeah. I mean, the one time I served on a jury, our clerk, she was fantastic, never once tried to sway anybody, was very vocal about you can't talk about this except, you know, in... After everyone's rested and stuff in the room, never once was she like, by the way, I'm really trying to get a new car. So if y'all could just put guilty down, that'd be helping me out.
Yeah, I'm trying to make it on the news. So we need a bombshell verdict.
Well, she made it on the news, Becky. You sure did.
In a big way.
In a dramatic moment that seemed to seal his fate, Alec Murdoch took the stand in his own defense on February 23rd and 24th. According to later subsequent testimony, Hill used this pivotal window to further influence the jury. She allegedly told jurors to watch Murdoch's body language and movements as he testified, a suggestion that preloaded the jury with suspicion before they had even heard cross-examination. I hate that this is right.
Yeah, it was crazy to me that she's like, because somebody handed him a box of tissues, mm-hmm. and she criticized him late, that juror later, and was like, this is what the defense wants us to do. They want us to feel bad. And I believe I would assume that it was in one of those private bathroom meetings that she had coached the foreperson, who later juror said, our foreperson came in and told us, oh, by the way, I know for a fact Murdoch was crying on cue. Well, how would she know that, or the foreperson know that, unless Becky Hill in the bathroom said, make sure the jury knows he was crying on cue. So you just get these.
And how does Becky know that?
No. And there's
nobody really know that except him.
Yeah. And he's also, maybe he's crying because he got caught. Yeah. And it's not really on cue. He's panicking.
I mean, at the end of the day, he did blow his son and wife away. So I'm sure that's upsetting on some level.
And it does something to the psyche at mm-hmm. some point, certainly. But yeah, it was, there's just not, and a defendant testifying in their own favor is the defendant's choice. Dick Harpootlian's been asked, like, will he do it again? And Dick said, it's not our choice. He'll decide whether or not to do it. Whether it went well for him or not, we can literally never know, because the jury didn't get to sit there as fact finders and unbiased decide for themselves, oh, that was weird. Oh, I noticed that. Instead, they watched it and then afterwards were told, that was all on cue, by the way. It was all fake. They did that just to get your sympathy. You're being tricked right now, which necessarily affects their discussions.
Yeah. And for her to frame it as, that's what they want us to believe. Yeah. It's like an us versus them, when you should be impartial. You're just there to do your job.
Yeah. And she should be like, you as the juries, you're not on the side of the state or mm-hmm. of the defense. You're on your own team over here, and whatever you decide, your own team. But instead, you're right, it was like, we and Creighton Waters, by the way, the prosecution did not know about this and the judge did not know about this, but she sort of framed it as like, we on the good side are trying mm-hmm. to get this murderer convicted. Don't you want to help us? And that also pulls at someone's moral heartstrings.
Yeah, for sure.
It's manipulative as fuck.
It's, you know, and then you're watching Alex's testimony through the lens of already looking for things that seem suspicious, which is going to completely cloud your judgment. It's like if you're told, like, hey, there's a big twist coming in the movie you're about to watch. And then the whole time you're just like, when's the twist going to happen? I know, you know, that's the only way you can watch it is like, a twist is about to come, which is mm-hmm. why I don't like spoilers, because it ruins how you watch everything. Spoilers, unfortunately, not illegal. What Becky Hill is doing, very much so.
Yeah, they should be. Should be punished the same. It's a Class B felony. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Here's something I didn't know until recently. 1 in 3 Americans think they're sensitive to gluten, but only about 1% actually have celiac disease. For everyone else, it might be something else in those same foods called FODMAPs. And going gluten-free doesn't always help.
FODZYME is a tasteless powder you sprinkle right onto your food. It helps break down FODMAPs, the hard-to-digest components in food that can cause bloating, gas, and pain before they cause discomfort. Think of it like Lactaid, but for garlic, onions, wheat, beans, and other common FODMAP foods. It mixes in fast, comes in portable packets, and makes digestion easier so you can eat more of what you love.
And here's what really sets FODZYME apart. Every customer gets access to a free product consultation with a registered dietitian. Not a chatbot, not an FAQ page. This is an actual dietitian who can walk you through your specific trigger foods and build a plan that works for your life. FODZYME was created by Harvard-trained scientists, clinically studied, and founded by an IBS sufferer who was tired of feeling uncomfortable after every meal. And that's the sucky thing about IBS or your stomach issues. Sometimes the response is like, I don't know, foods make you sick, mm-hmm. sorry. And so if you're trying to eat something like beans or something with like garlic in it, that really, it's like, I gotta have garlic and onions on everything or I'm not trying to eat it.
I totally relate to... You eat something and you're like, well, I know this is going to make me feel real shitty in about 20 minutes. And I have been sprinkling the FODZYME on all of my food recently. I have recently had pizza, which would normally give me indigestion. Totally fine. I even get it in my purse so I can take it if we're going out to eat. And it really has no flavor. It affects zero mm-hmm. of what you're eating, except in a positive way, because it doesn't make your tummy hurt afterwards.
Mm-hmm. It's just a little packet that goes in your bag, mm-hmm. so you're not like, it's not like you're a crazy lady with a huge, like, let me just get my giant tub out.
Size. Yes,
nobody would know. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
We're so excited to partner with Podzyme and offer you 30% off your first order when you go to icaneatagain.com/creepy. That's icaneatagain.com/creepy for 30% off your first order. Finally, you can enjoy your favorite foods without the pain. Just go to icaneatagain.com/creepy. On February 24th, Hill claimed she had seen a Facebook post written by the ex-husband of juror 785, allegedly implying the juror had been discussing the case with outsiders. Hill reported the alleged Facebook post to Judge Clifton Newman on February 27th, but was unable to produce a copy of it, a detail that would later prove significant.
Yeah, it seems to me that someone with the same last name as Juror 785, who is the egg lady, who is Myra Crosby is her name. She's identified herself. She's written a book. She's like said, I am egg lady.
She got the book deal.
She wrote her own. But the post in question was by a person who had the same name or even just same last name as her ex. And in fact, lived in a different city. So and then deleted it. And then later another post was like, I'm sorry, I posted that ugly thing. I was so drunk. But it was, again, from this other person. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and also the original post was deleted like days before this claim. So it's like, I think what it was juror 785 was like, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to vote. And that every time Becky talked to her was like, so you can tell he's guilty, right? And juror 785 was like, I'm not sure. I'm going to listen till the end. I'm being impartial. And
as so Becky one was should. Like,
and I think so Becky started going, oh, she's going to be a problem. She's going to be our hung jury. We got to get her and her eggs out of here.
She targeted her. Mm-hmm. Do you think the Facebook post was maybe an account created by Becky?
Or she took advantage of just a post that could be similar? Because mm-hmm. the ex-husband swore in a sworn statement, like, I did not post this. And then I believe the defense downloaded the entirety of his Facebook activity for, like, the whole point in question.
Mortifying.
And yeah, to kill me. But yeah, it was not in there. He did not make that. He never posted anything to that Facebook group even. So she also just straight lied to the judge and like made this up. But yeah, you're right. Like, I don't know, maybe if it was just a coincidence that she found the post and was going to try to manipulate it or created a dupe account and try to do it.
Well, my question is, how would she accidentally stumble upon that? So then I'm like, I don't think she would. So as the clerk, are they responsible for every day kind of like searching the jurors' names on social media to see if they're inappropriately posting stuff?
No, she said, Becky said, oh, I would just happen to be in this page called Walterboro Word of Mouth. And I saw this post. It's crazy. Well, she said she saw the post on the 24th. Well, in the apology post, it had said, like, I've already taken my post down. So it's like the timing didn't, like the apology was up, but the post wasn't up. Anyways, it just sort of fell apart. So I think Judge Newman was like, oh, I don't know about all that. Like, if we don't have a copy of it, it's, you know, it's probably fine.
Mm-hmm. The following day, February 28th, Hill took matters into her own hands. She summoned juror 785 alone to her private office and interrogated her. This included asking the juror directly how she planned to vote. Hill then told the juror that the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, or SLED, had confirmed the existence of the Facebook post. That was a lie. SLED had confirmed nothing of the sort. Hill also offered to, quote, reinstate a restraining order for juror 785, a legal action entirely outside her authority to grant. Judge Newman subsequently examined juror 785 in a closed in-camera proceeding, but Hill's full involvement was not yet understood at that stage.
Yeah, it's crazy that she's straight up lied to this juror that SLED had done an investigation. No, they did not. I will get those restraining orders reinstated. No, you cannot. And juror 85 said, I don't talk to my ex-husband. She said, you know, I had been drinking with my ex-husband like a long time ago. And like, it's, you know, I don't see him. I don't spend time with him. Like, he's my ex for a reason. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him in like 10 years. And Becky's like, well, I can help you out. Just let me know how you're going to vote. And juror 85 continually kept saying, well, I don't really know. I don't really know how I'm going to vote.
And Becky would be like, you shouldn't have already decided before the defense even presents their case, well, he's guilty. That's mm-hmm. not what you were sworn in to do when they picked you.
Mm-hmm. And it was, I think she was kind of taking a temperature of like what the vote was. And if the vote is like 10 to 2, 11 to 1, she was trying to target the holdouts.
Yeah. Which, I mean, they shouldn't even have those numbers at this stage. Mm-mm. One, she shouldn't be asking that question. It's entirely mm-hmm. inappropriate. Also, the jury shouldn't have already, you know what? I feel like
yeah.
someone in this jury at some point had to have had the thought, this seems like she's really overstepping and like this might be illegal and I should probably go tell somebody. And then they didn't. And they should yeah. have.
I think juror 785 was like, everything seemed kind of weird, but like the judge talked to me and she talked, you know, it was kind of like, I believe Becky Hill was preying on the ignorance of the jury, because you do want a jury of lay people, like you want everyday community members. And the thing is, everyday community members are not versed in constitutional rights of defendants and what a clerk of court can and cannot say. And therefore, you just take advantage of that and run roughshod over his constitutional rights and be like, she's not going to tell anybody. She doesn't know. She's worried about her dozen eggs. Like, she's not worried about all this, you know?
Well, now everyone listening knows they are not allowed to do that. So no. If you're serving on a jury and anybody for the court asks you how you're going to vote, go tell the judge or someone, because that is, they're not allowed to ask you that.
No, it's sus as hell. And you're not really supposed to take straw polls, like where you say, okay, after today's testimony, how's everyone feeling? Or let's all go around mm-hmm. and say how we're feeling. You're not supposed to do that until the deliberations at the end. And so, like you said, the idea that anybody had any numbers that it was like 10 to 2 or 11 to 1, how do you have those numbers? Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know. Maybe because you take the four person into the bathroom with you and then you tell everyone, don't ask about what we're doing yeah. in the bathroom.
Which is wild. The whole thing is so brazen for her, and which is why it makes me think this couldn't have been the first time. I mean, is it the biggest case she's probably worked on? Probably, that would have mm-hmm. gotten, you know, the most eyeballs on a book. Mm-hmm. I don't think you go from being completely clean cut in your job to this level of manipulation just in one case. It seems, I don't know. Like I said, if I had been convicted and she was the clerk, I'd be asking to relook into it.
Right. I would want to go and interrogate all the jurors on mm-hmm. my case, because, yeah, there's, like you said, it's not, these don't seem like tactics that she just invented, yeah. perhaps, or maybe she did, but it does seem like, well, I'll just take him in the bathroom. Like, how did you know that the bathroom's a good place to have secret visits yeah. with jurors? And yeah.
It's so ballsy. And what a terrible position to put the four person in, too.
Mm-hmm. All the jurors in, that they're just yeah. like, that's a lot to handle already, all the information, much less having some, you know, lake house hungry woman breathing down your neck.
Mm-hmm. The jury was taken on a site visit to the Moselle property on March 1st, 2023. During the outing, Hill and the jury foreperson slipped away for yet another private conversation, away from the group, away from other jurors and court personnel. Hill's later book would hint that she communicated her belief in Murdoch's guilt to others at the scene.
Yeah, she said, while the jurors viewed the Moselle property, we all could hear and see Alex's story was impossible. Some of us, either from the courthouse, law enforcement, or jury at Moselle, had an epiphany and shared our thoughts with our eyes. At that moment, many of us standing there knew, I knew, and they knew, that Alex was guilty.
She's telling on herself in her own book. Like, nobody had to even come out and say, hey, this happened, because anybody could read this and be like, what do you mean you all said it with your eyes? And yeah. you all, like, you shouldn't have an opinion. You certainly shouldn't share it with the jurors. Nobody's supposed to be talking about this case until Mm-mm. everybody's rested and you're deliberating. So you're admitting to doing illegal things on the job in this book that you think is going to get you your lake house.
Yeah, it's like not having enough sense to know when to shut up.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was extremely, the Moselle visit was so, it's like the turning point for a lot of them, because I think they visualized it and then realized, you know, distance-wise, whatever. And maybe they really did have that epiphany, but that's an epiphany for them to have as independent fact finders, mm-hmm. not for you to be like making eyes at them when she's like, we communicated with our eyes, like, you think he's guilty, right? Eyeball, eyeball.
That's so crazy. And I mean, you're there. I'm trying to put myself in the position of a juror who has seen horrible crime scene photos, horrible descriptions of the crime scene. Then you're taken to the crime scene, and all you're playing through in your head is like, that's where he was laying. Well, mm-hmm. that's where his uncle later picked up all of his brains out of the mm-hmm. shed there. And that's where Maggie was. So you're imagining like the most gruesome, grisly scene possible. And then you have someone helicopter parenting over you like, mm-hmm. Oh, did you check over here? Because right here, you need to look at this. This is going to tell you all you need to know. It's takes away the ability for you to come to a conclusion on your own, which is the whole point of a jury. Like you said, a jury of your peers, not someone that's involved in the case and has ulterior motives influencing how you're going to vote.
Yeah, ideally we all have rules and ideally we all play by them. And it was pivotal, you're right, because at the time, Will Folks, who writes, he owns Fitz News, which broke a ton mm-hmm. of the Murdoch stories and stuff. He spoke to the New Yorker, because an article just came out in the New Yorker about this, and said that his sources told him the jury was known to be 10-2 in favor of guilty before the trip to Moselle. And then Becky describes they have this epiphany, and then it was 11-1 after it. And then Eric Bland, who is a lawyer for the financial victims, also tweeted before the Moselle visit, right now, at least 10 jurors' minds are made up. There may be two on the fence. So there was some sort of rumor kind of swirling. First of all, like you said, how does anybody know what the straw poll is, like 10-2? But in my opinion, Becky was eyeballing, okay, who are the holdouts, mm-hmm. and going up to him at Moselle like, can't you see? Can't you see?
So in that case, you've got somebody tweeting while the trial is still going on, mm-hmm. saying, okay, we know the vote is 10-2. Is that not enough for the judge to be like, how do y'all know this is the vote? We need to stop proceedings and dig into this before we continue along, and probably are going to have to redo this at some point.
I'm not sure, unless it was just based on, and it can also just be based on witnesses in the courtroom who are like, listen, 10 of those people were scowling at him when he was crying. Mm-hmm. They don't give a fuck about this guy. Yeah, maybe. But yeah, that's a great point. Like, how did anybody know what these like slam dunk numbers were? And then they go to Moselle, they have closing arguments. And that's when Becky goes back to 785, who said, oh, you know, I'm not really sure. I'm going to review all the evidence. And Becky said, everyone needs to be on the same page.
Mm-mm. I mean, maybe, but that's not for you to say.
And that's what I don't like, is because I think she was like, okay, the Moselle visit, I'll get the two holdouts there. Well, she got one of them and the egg lady wouldn't crack.
And in South Carolina, it has to be
unanimous.
Unanimous, right? Not just the majority. Yeah. So, man. That's why. I mean, if she's going to go and be like, well, I saw a Facebook post that isn't even really this lady's Facebook post, and go to the judge with that, where's the person going, by the way, you got a bunch of reporters that know a bunch of inside information. We should probably figure out who's leaking that to them.
Right. It would be normally that would be the clerk of court, I would think, to go like, oh, Your Honor, I've been hearing these things. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go and tell the jury. And that's when you get the jury together and go, I'm going to remind you, do not talk to one another. Don't talk about this until deliberation. But she was doing the opposite. Yeah. She was in fact talking to them to make it.
I guess if you're the one who is supposed to be in charge of that not happening, it's very easy to manipulate.
And nobody said, Will Folks did not reveal his source, Eric Bland, who's an attorney and not a journalist. He never said how he might have known or what gave him that idea. But we don't know whether and to what extent Becky was already talking to the media. She was able to hand out, we'll hear, business cards. So she had some sort of media connection mm-hmm. before all of this. And again, that's like the opposite of what the clerk of court mm-hmm. should be doing.
No, she's using it as campaigning, essentially. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
On verdict day, the pressure Hill allegedly exerted on the jury reached its peak. Juror 785 received a phone call from her ex-husband, the same man whose supposed Facebook post had nearly gotten her dismissed days earlier. Hill's response was immediate, reportedly telling the juror that
the Murdochs probably got to him.
Hill then, according to testimony, again asked the juror how she planned to vote and told her directly that
everything Murdoch has said has been lies.
Shortly after, juror 785 was dismissed from the panel, the woman who would come to be known informally as the Egg Lady, after being allowed to retrieve a dozen eggs she had kept in the deliberation room.
Yeah, there was an email that came in as well that it turns out it was from a woman admitted who she was in this Discord channel that Mandy Matney's Luna Shark Media runs this Discord channel. And it was this email that was kind of alleging that juror 785 had talked with a tenant of a house that she maybe owned about the case or something like that. Juror 85 said, oh yeah, they asked me how it was going. And I said, well, they delivered pizza to us. Like, you know, it was very benign or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, ironically, juror 785 was doing everything right, which is to say, not really talking about the thing. And Becky Hill was like, we got to figure out a way to get her to, you know, get her out of here. Because, you know, right before she's dismissed, juror 785 later testified and said, she asked me, okay, you've seen the closing arguments. Like, what do you think? And that 785 said, well, you know, the closing was good, but I still have a few questions. And Becky's like, well, what questions do you have? And 785 said, well, you know, there's no murder weapon. And Becky was like, well, what makes you think he's guilty? And juror 785 was like, you know, the Snapchat video at the dog kennels. And that's whenever she's like, well, everything he said has been lies. You should just don't even think about the guns. They're never going to even be seen again. No one's ever going to find a murder weapon. So if that's what you're holding out for, like, don't hold out. And she asked juror 785, like, what's the jury saying? And Becky said, well, I think the foreperson just needs to go in and tell everybody to just raise their hands and it'll just be over and done with, because, you know, everybody's just going to vote the same way. So it was like, she's like holding this lady hostage, bullying her.
It is. It's so uncomfortable. I would feel so harassed if I was that juror. And I still don't even really know what got her dismissed. Like, did Hill convince the judge, like, she's been tainted by her ex-husband, or she's been talking about this clearly outside of the courtroom?
Yeah, so it was the email. So a coworker of a tenant of her had emailed and said that the Egg Lady is my landlord. She had expressed an opinion about the case when she was delivering a refrigerator to my house. And the Egg Lady said, you know, they sent us pizza. Like, that's really all I talked about. It wasn't an
opinion. That was just a benign fact.
But then juror 785 was, you know, questioned by Becky in this situation. And then Becky goes to the judge and is like, listen, we got this email. She's been discussing the case. We just need to, like, get rid of her. She wanted to get rid of her, though, because she was on the fence. And that's when Judge Newman, who is now retired, was so good at his job, though. But he's like, oh, boy, I'm not too pleased about the clerk interrogating a juror as opposed to coming to me and bringing it to me. And the Supreme Court said he was right to be concerned. Yeah. And that's, you know, I think for him, he was traveling. And so that's not his normal court. He didn't work with Becky Hill all the time. And as a general rule, this type of behavior is unfathomable. Like, I can't even describe how you wouldn't even guess that something insane like this was going on. So for him to be like, well, she shouldn't have questioned her, but, you know, thinking like, well, it's probably just about this email. He wasn't like, oh, she's been belligerent and like taking the other juror in the bathroom and stuff. So you're right. I think that it was just a bunch of folks that didn't quite know how wrong things were. And the one person that they thought they could report the wrongs to was the one doing the wrongs. Mm-hmm. It's like the classic, you know, authority figure is abusing somebody. Yeah. It's like, that's the authority figure who I'd report to.
It makes me also question, this is total speculation, but if Hill kind of had her finger on the pulse of who juror 785 might interact with on a day-to-day basis, reaches out to them like, hey, I'm just doing my job as a clerk, but has this juror said anything? You get this, well, they said they sent pizza. Okay, good enough for me. Now I'm going to go tattletale on her.
Yeah, I think it was just like any straw, like just trying to grasp at just anything, because she was like, I'm trying to get my lake house. Let's make it happen.
That evening, as the remaining jurors prepared to deliberate, Hill allegedly told them their deliberations,
shouldn't take long.
And then handed out reporters' business cards to the panel. 3 hours later, the jury returned its verdict, guilty on all counts.
And she also told them, which I don't think was true, if you deliberate longer than 11 p.m., you're going to have to stay in a hotel overnight. And none of them had overnight bags. And so that's an added pressure of like, let's just decide. And then she told them after, by the way, as soon as you get this over with, like, you're going to be famous. And here's these cards of these reporters. And one of the jurors said that he appeared on Good Morning America, like, when the verdict happened, because he felt like, oh, I'm supposed to be doing this. And he was, in fact, like, wearing, like, the same outfit that he did at deliberations. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how, like, soon after mm-hmm. the verdict, he was willing to do an interview. And they said, basically, we were all pressured. And she also, after the verdict and before sentencing, got them all together and was like, okay, the network news wants to talk to you all together. So let's all, you know, we're all going to talk together. And when they, as a group, the jurors traveled to appear on the Today Show, she, like, went with them.
Like a PR person.
Yes. That's crazy.
Insane. Yeah. Totally not her position at all.
No, it's nuts.
Alec Murdoch was sentenced to 2 consecutive life terms in prison without the possibility of parole. The verdict was celebrated publicly, and Hill was widely praised in the press as a key figure in a historic trial. But behind the scenes, she wasn't finished. She allegedly pressured jurors to speak to network news as a group, behavior that, like so much of what preceded it, suggested motivations well beyond the ordinary duties of a clerk of court. What none of those reporters knew yet, what the country didn't know yet, was that the woman handing out the business cards had, for 6 weeks, her thumb on the scale of justice.
And I think initially the defense attorneys were appealing on different grounds that may on their own have been arguable, and it might have been a close call, like whether or not, you know, you might not get a new trial. But until they found all this stuff out, I don't think they had as good of a shot at a new trial. Mm-hmm. Like, once you find this out, you're like, oh yeah, that's a magic bullet.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah.
But nobody knew at that time. And, you know, she got a person to co-write a book with her, the person that co-wrote the book with her. She lied to the court and said, oh, this is a Sunday school teacher, so that the co-writer could sit in the courtroom and have a special seat in the courtroom and, like, listen. And you're like, you just, the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time.
On August 1st, 2023, Becky Hill's book, Behind the Doors of Justice, was published. Rhonda McElvine, the Barnwell County Clerk of Court who assisted with the trial, later testified that Hill repeatedly told her she wanted a guilty verdict because it would sell more books and help her buy a lake house. Hill's book was ultimately pulled from publication after it was discovered she had plagiarized portions of it. She made approximately $100,000 in book sales.
Yeah, her defense attorney said she's remorseful regarding the plagiarism allegations, saying the pressures of developing additional content under tight time deadlines resulted in Ms. Hill taking material written by BBC reporter Holly Hondrick. So don't do that.
So not only did she help orchestrate what the outcome was going to be so she could write this book, which we all have to assume she was already writing during the trial. She had a manuscript going and was going home every night, like, updating it. Mm-hmm. She's got more knowledge of this trial than arguably anybody there. And she still mm-hmm. can't come up with her own words to write something.
Like you said, she's been planning this since, I don't know, fall of 2022. Mm-hmm. And you waited till the last minute and was like, oh, damn it. And it's like, by the way, no one told you you had to do this. It's my understanding. I think it was a self-published book. Like, you know, it's not that she had some contractual obligation. You had to get it out on this. No, like,
it wasn't a deadline.
You chose to do this. Mm-hmm. I think she was trying to strike while the iron was hot. And it, like I said, she also had a co-writer. So hire another co-writer, like a third co-writer, maybe.
And if you're saying the pressures for content was so high, the content was already laid out before you. You shouldn't be creating any new content. This isn't something that's going to happen in the future. This has already happened. The content's out there. You just tell the story like it happened.
She's like, well, I had to leave out all the parts where I was tampering with the jury.
Exactly. So there's huge, like, days worth of information missing because she can't write about that.
She's like, and then I was in my office doing nothing illegal.
Chapter six. They're like, okay, but that was one sentence in chapter too many. Five.
Hang on a minute.
Later that month, prompted by the book, jurors came forward with affidavits describing Hill's jury tampering. Murdoch's defense attorneys seized the new information and filed motions aimed at securing a new trial for their client. They attached the juror affidavits supporting their argument that Hill's level of tampering was so outrageous that they denied Murdoch his constitutional right to a fair trial.
And I'm sure for Jim Griffin and Dick Harpootlian and all them got Becky Hill's book the second it came out. Yes. And was just with the highlighter going through going, oh, hell yes, this dumbass admitted to it. And she admitted this and she admitted this. And then once you hear from the jurors, I think it was maybe like seven or eight of them said, like, I didn't hear her say anything about that. Another one kind of was like, yeah, I heard her say stuff, but it didn't really matter. But then when you get to the egg lady, it's kind of like, You did everything but hold her up with a switchblade against the wall and be like, you're going to vote the right way, right?
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you may say, like, it didn't really affect me. I don't know. I mean, maybe you don't even realize it affected you. It certainly had more effect than if she had kept her mouth shut.
Yeah, and she had, you know, she'd also said stuff which is, like, you cannot say as a attorney before the jury, which is pointing out whether and to what extent a defendant wants to testify on their own behalf. And if they choose not to, you specifically can't say, interesting, he's choosing not to testify, or interesting, he's choosing to testify so he can lie to you. They don't, like, attorneys can't say that. Mm-mm. And she had specifically said that to the jury beforehand, saying, oh, it's so rare for a defendant to ever testify. So him testifying, it's going to be an epic day. This is huge. And that one juror said, that made me think, like, oh, huh. Mm-hmm. And like you said, when you think consciously or unconsciously, that does affect things of how you listen, how you pay. Like, there's about to be a twist. It's like, I'm locked in.
You're just, you're on your toes. And for me, I would be in my head the whole time, like, and probably miss a lot of what's being said because I'm not fully present.
And it's not what he deserves. Everybody, even murderers, deserve a full 12 attentive jury members. Untainted.
We have to allow it for everyone or it doesn't work for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
The initial presiding jurist, Judge Newman, recused himself from post-trial matters, and Chief Justice Jean Toll was appointed instead. For 2 days in January 2024, an evidentiary hearing was held where jurors testified under oath to Hill's shocking conduct. At the time, Hill denied everything. The post-trial court eventually found that Hill made improper comments, but did not find they rose to the level of warranting a new trial. Murdoch's motion was denied. The court concluded he failed to prove that he was prejudiced by Hill's comments.
Which is crazy because one juror testified, said, you know, I heard Becky say, oh my gosh, it's so epic. You need to watch him. He's testifying in his own defense. And the juror was asked, did this verdict, was the verdict influenced in any way by the communications from the clerk of court? And the juror said, yes. And then was asked, how was it influenced? And the juror said, to me, it felt like she made it seem like he was already guilty. Mm-hmm. And the question, okay, I understand that. That's the tenor of the remark she made. Did that affect your finding of guilty in this case? Juror, yes, ma'am. So the jurors all testified, like I said, seven or eight of them said, I didn't hear anything. One of them's like, I heard the body language. Another one was like, epic day. Then, it wasn't just a one-off comment. Mm-hmm. The fact that they had to have multiple days of hearings is crazy.
And if just one juror says, yes, it made me vote guilty, well, that's enough to get the trial thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
On March 25th, 2024, Becky Hill resigned from office. Weeks later, in May, a state ethics commission referred complaints about her actions for criminal prosecution. It took a year of investigation, but in May 2025, Hill was arrested for perjury, obstruction of justice, and misconduct in office. She fought the charges for several months before finally pleading guilty in December 2025 to perjury, as she had lied about allowing media to photograph sealed crime scene images of Maggie and Paul's bodies.
Let's all take a moment to appreciate the fact that this woman sold access to grisly photographs of the slain bodies of the victims. All the shit she did with the jury, also very bad and gross. But this is the extent to which she is a fame whore.
This is next level.
Come on.
what's the most sensational, grisly thing I could give to these reporters? Well, yeah, it's going to be the crime scene photos, of course. I mean, we all heard how they were killed. It sounded horrible. And here you go. And then the family of these poor people are like, so my grandson's dead body was used as like a way to get people to give you money to pay for your book in your lake house. They wanted to see my grandson with his head blown off, and you said, okay. They wanted to for see media. My daughter shot to death at her home, and you said, sure, yeah, here you go.
Mm-hmm. And you had no qualms about it, and then lied when you were asked on the stand, did you show the body's pictures? And she said, no, I didn't do it. So that's the perjury. The forensic evidence, I think there was footage. I don't know if it was footage or some sort of evidence showed she had escorted media personnel to where the secured under seal documents were and then unsealed them. And it's your job as the clerk of court to fucking ensure that the evidence isn't mishandled. And again, you're the one mishandling it. Yeah. It could not be worse.
No, the call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah, yeah, you, and good for her for finally pleading guilty, because, I mean, I think there was no other choice. It was just, you did this. We know you did this. We have evidence of it, but goddamn.
And shame on media for, y'all know this ain't right. Y'all know this is illegal. And don't be the person that's like, well, I'll do anything to get this story, because that makes you a piece of shit, too.
Exactly.
Everybody sucks here.
Right, exactly. Because it's like, it's not that Becky was like calling up reporters going, hey, you want to see some photos? I mean, maybe she did. But the, like you said, the fact that the reporter was like, yeah, I'll go in. Yeah. I'll get it. Like, have some fucking decorum, dude. Some shit doesn't need to be seen by everybody. Mm-mm. It's a soul. Sinisterhood will be right back.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
With the clerk of court convicted and removed from office, Murdoch's defense attorneys appealed their motion for a new trial up to the South Carolina Supreme Court. In February 2026, both the defense and state presented their oral argument before the court. After 3 months of deliberation, the court issued its unanimous opinion. Alec Murdoch's conviction would be reversed and remanded for new trial.
I think there were some complaints at the oral argument because folks said that, you know, oh, it's kind of softball questions at the defense. They weren't really asking much. My opinion is when you come with a record like this, I don't know how much oral argument I really need.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what do you argue? Like, she didn't mean it. Like, what do you, I don't know that the Murdochs needed, the defense needed to get grilled when they were in the right, constitutionally speaking.
You can all read this poorly written book and see that she fucked up.
She admitted it. Yeah. And now she's pled guilty. Like, this is a person with egregious behavior.
Mm-hmm. The court's analysis relied on a legal doctrine called Rimmer presumption, based on the 1954 U.S. Supreme Court decision, Rimmer v. United States. Under this doctrine, any improper private contact between a third party and a juror about the matter before the jury is presumed to be prejudicial to the defendant. Once the presumption is triggered, the burden is shifted to the government to prove there is no reasonable probability the verdict was affected.
And so that was the issue at the lower court level, is that Justice Toll said, oh, well, you know, Murdoch didn't sufficiently prove that he was prejudiced by Becky's comments, you know, by all these comments. Well, that's not the rule. The rule is this Rimmer v. U.S., which is a federal presumption that has been adopted by South Carolina state courts that says it doesn't matter what it is, that there, it's so egregious. Like, it, the idea of an officer of the court is such a role with such authority that anything that you say, and you're wearing that badge that says I was elected, I work for you people, And anything you mention is presumptively prejudicial against the defendant. So shut the fuck up. Mm-hmm. Shut the fuck up. And she didn't shut the fuck up. So then it becomes the state's burden to go, well, it was no big deal. And it's like, well, how could you prove it's no big deal when she held the egg lady down and was like, you're going to fucking vote the right way, right?
And you have a juror saying, yeah, it made me vote not guilty when I may not have otherwise.
Yeah. And it's like, even without those jurors, it's like presumptively that is prejudicial. Yeah. And I don't think you can prove that any argument is going to prove that it's not. And if they were going harder on the state at the oral arguments, that's probably why, because it's the state's burden it becomes a rebuttable presumption, but it's a very difficult to rebut, as it should be, because we don't want fucking clerks or bailiffs or judges or anybody walking by the jury going, make sure you hang them high. Mm-hmm. That's not good.
Mm-mm. Which is one thing that's so odd about this. I mean, this was not her first rodeo in the courtroom. She knows how it all works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just crazy that she was like, oh, yeah, I'll get away with it. I mean, she knows the law. So she knows when her book comes out that what she's doing is illegal. I don't understand how she didn't think it was going to be a problem, or if she was just like, oh, well, I'm kind of circumventing around the issue by doing X, Y, Z, because she was just too stupid to realize what she was really doing.
Yeah, I think if you asked her, like, oh, so do you know about the Remmer presumption and, you know, constitutional right to a jury, she wouldn't know that. I think she probably was motivated by two factors, which is the money in the lake house and the fame. And also, you know, you've seen the images. That's highly emotional. If you are the clerk of court and you're in charge of all the evidence, you're like, this motherfucker did it. I know he did it. I've seen it myself. I've got to make sure these people get it right. And it's like, that's just not your role.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. Like, she knows that she can't tamper with the jury. So if she's in writing and we all looked in each other's eyes at Moselle and said, you know what happened, right? Like, how does she think that's not going to come back to bite her in the ass? And then the trial is going to get thrown out.
Yeah, I think she maybe thought, well, they'll argue about it, but perhaps was, again, not aware of this Supreme Court decision that's like, you can't sneeze in their direction with a stink eye at the defendant. You got to really keep the line. But I think she knew she was doing wrong and didn't think she'd get caught. And you're right, she's too stupid not to put it in the book.
Yeah, because, I mean, I didn't know of the Remmer presumption, but I know that the court clerk can't do stuff like that. So she's got to know that, like, regardless of knowing that what she did was overstep. She wouldn't have been having secret meetings if she thought what she was doing wasn't illegal.
That's a good point. And she wouldn't say, y'all don't ask him what we talk about in our secret bathroom meetings.
No, like, she knew what she was doing. You know,
yeah, the whole time. I think you're right. It was probably just she's too stupid. And I think because she thought she had the moral high ground of like, well, yeah, I'm going to write it in the book, but like a murderer got put away. So like, you know, ends justify the means. Yeah. And it's just like, that's just not the society we're trying to live in.
No. And I do think that she probably saw that all the evidence and was like the rest of us, yeah, he's guilty as shit. And then there's a chance this guy's verdict gets overturned because of what you did. And you're going to have to live with that.
Right. And she was so focused on bullying these one or two holdout jurors that she did not realize, ironically, she is the cause of him going, I won't say going free, but of the conviction being overturned. Yeah. Of like, you pushed it so hard, you ruined it.
The South Carolina Supreme Court held that Hill's comments clearly triggered that presumption. Her statements weren't procedural or neutral. She attacked the heart of the defense, Alec Murdoch's credibility. Her comments served to bolster the prosecution's theory and improperly sway at least one juror. The court compared Hill's conduct to a 1966 U.S. Supreme Court case involving a bailiff who told jurors,
"Oh, that wicked fellow, he is guilty."
The court noted that the official character of a court officer carries enormous weight with a jury that has been under their care for weeks. As an elected official, chosen by the very community that made up the Colleton County jury pool, Hill's role as a clerk gave her words a stronger sway than a mere bystander.
Yeah, and in that 1966 case, it was like, that's the guy that's been shepherding them in and out of the building for the whole time of the trial. You become very, like, attached to him. Like you said earlier, it's kind of like your coach, your teacher, your pastor. It's somebody that you look to for advice mm-hmm. throughout a long, emotional, exhausting ordeal. Yeah, anything, even if she said one or two comments, but it's like, no, she was holding meetings and mm-hmm. holding people up.
Yeah.
So it was worse than any other. The amount of time, I would call this decision a bench slap, which is what, when the judges are real pissed off. I mean, you could just tell they're just like, this is insane. Yeah. We've never seen anything like this before.
You're going to waste all of our time.
Mm-hmm. And they said, like, this is not anybody's fault except hers. Like, the defense did great. The prosecution did great. Everybody else tried. The judges all tried their best. But you had this, if it weren't for you, meddling clerk. Mm-hmm. It was you the whole time.
Mm-hmm. The lower post-trial court had found that Hill made improper comments, but concluded those comments didn't actually affect the verdict. It pointed to juror testimony, saying they weren't influenced and relied on the strength of the evidence against Murdoch. However, the legal burden was not on Murdoch to show prejudice. Case law demanded that the court assume Hill's comments had prejudiced him and shift the burden to the state to prove no harm had been done by Hill's conduct.
And that's one thing, too, for the state to hang its hat on, is that the lower court did say, like, there is sufficient evidence here to convict him. Like, you didn't really need this lady, you know, influencing the juror. It's just that was the wrong legal test. And so that's mm-hmm. why the lower court was wrong. But I don't think it's like hopeless and this guy's going to like walk free, at least.
The post-trial court also relied heavily on juror testimony about whether the comments affected their deliberations. However, that type of testimony is barred by South Carolina's Rule 606B. That rule protects the sanctity of jury deliberations by prohibiting jurors from testifying about the effect of outside influences on their own mental processes or their reasoning in reaching a verdict. Jurors can testify that an outside contact happened, but they are not allowed to describe how it changed their thinking. The court held the post-trial judge should never have asked those questions and certainly should not have relied on the answers.
Yeah, I think it was just a misapplication of the law at the lower court level that when the jurors were testifying, the question should have been, did Becky say something to you? Yes. What did she say? X, Y, and Z. That is sufficient to assume prejudice. Mm-hmm. But then to be like, how did it make you feel? How did it make you think? They're not supposed to ask those questions, much less say, look, it made him feel this guy said, nah, I heard her, but it didn't really make me think anything different. Because like you brought up earlier, he may consciously say it didn't make me think differently, but subconsciously, it is an officer of the court with a greater weight of opinion, so you can't know whether or not it did or didn't. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that the judge went, well, the guy said he heard it and it didn't bother him, so therefore it's not prejudice. It's like the wrong test.
Yeah.
So it sucks. Yeah. It sucks because he's going to get a new trial. Sinisterhood will be right back.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
The court also pushed back on the post-trial court's conclusion that because only three jurors heard Hill's comments, the prejudice was limited. The U.S. Supreme Court has long held that a defendant is entitled to be tried by 12 impartial jurors, not just 9 or 10. The taint of even a few compromised jurors is not a math problem to be solved by counting the ones who said they weren't affected.
You got to worry about the taint. You always got to watch the taint. There can't be any taint. No taint.
The court was careful to note that its reversal said nothing about Murdoch's guilt or innocence. It acknowledged the prosecution presented substantial evidence, including Murdoch's own admission during trial, that he committed the financial crimes at the core of the state's motive theory. But it emphasized that the strength of the state's case does not cure unconstitutional jury interference. The ultimate question was not whether there was enough evidence to convict. It was whether the jury that did the convicting was impartial and untainted. Due to Hill's conduct, which the court called
breathtaking, disgraceful, and unprecedented in South Carolina,
Murdoch was denied his constitutional right.
This lady going to go down in history.
She certainly nope. is.
You know?
Since the court ordered a new trial, it did not have to weigh in on every evidentiary issue that Murdoch had raised on appeal. However, it chose to address one issue proactively, the question of how much evidence of Murdoch's financial crimes should be admitted at retrial. The state's theory was that Murdoch murdered his wife Maggie and son Paul to buy himself time and shift attention away from financial crimes that were closing in on him. On the morning of the murders, the law firm's CFO had confronted Murdoch about nearly $800,000 in missing attorney's fees. 3 days after the murders, a hearing was scheduled in a civil case that would have required Murdoch to open his financial records to opposing counsel. The court found that some evidence of financial crimes was properly admitted, and the theory of motive was legally coherent and within the trial court's discretion. But the court was unanimous in finding the trial court let the state go too far. By the court's calculation, the state spent 12 and a half hours over 10 days presenting financial crimes testimony to the jury. The court said the same point could have been made in a fraction of that time. It indicated that the state may have run afoul of several rules of evidence, including Rule 403, which prohibits relevant testimony if its probative value is outweighed by its prejudicial nature.
This was a big question during the trial, and I had a gut feeling that they went too hard on the financial crimes. It's like enough to say at least those two things, right? Like the CFO knew he was 800K in the red, like stealing it. Even if you set up like, yeah, he had this forged bank account that ironically named Forge, which is like so funny, like forgery. But, you know, that was where he sent the money. And also, you know, he was fixing to have to show all of his stuff. That's a sick, like, I think if you show those numbers, that's enough. But they really hammered in on like, he's a nasty guy. Mm-hmm. He's a pretty shitty, nasty guy. And there was objections. The objections were overruled, but they were preserved on appeal. And I think that was going to be the real Dick Harpootlian and Jim Griffin's, like, that was their big home run swing that they thought, we'll get a new trial based on this. And that was like, maybe they would have gotten a new trial based on it, because it maybe went like 12 hours is a lot of testimony about something that's like a trial. That's what everyone called it, a trial within a trial. I think it's not less of an issue at the retrial because he's already admitted to the financial crime. Mm-hmm. So like, you don't have to hammer on and be like, I'm going to have to prove to you that he did these crimes and all. It's like, he already admitted that he did them. So here's what they are. And the timing, I think you can focus more on the timing version and why that would be, today's the day I have to kill them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately that Snapchat was what did him in.
Certainly.
Which had nothing to do with any of them.
Nah.
As an example, the court highlighted testimony about the fact that one of Murdoch's theft victims had a disabled brother who could not serve as personal representative of his mother's estate. That detail had zero probative value to the question of why Murdoch killed his family. What it did do was paint him as a man who preys on the vulnerable, exactly the kind of character assassination Rule 403 is designed to prevent. The prejudicial effect of hearing he is a man who steals from vulnerable adults substantially outweighs any legitimate evidentiary purpose as to whether he killed his wife and son. The court made clear that on retrial, if the financial crimes evidence comes in at all, the state must present it efficiently and without the inflammatory details that permeated the first trial.
And I think that was Gloria Satterfield's son was like crying on the stand and like describing how his mom was like probably pushed down the stairs by Paul Murdoch and like how they lost money and then they can't get it, you know, all that stuff. And so that is a true thing that happened, and that family deserves recompense for what happened to them. But it does muddy the water of like, we're here to talk about what happened to Maggie and Paul. Yeah. And it doesn't.
It's hard because
weigh on it.
If your whole argument is, well, he needed the money. Because he was about, he obviously had just got caught with the 800 grand. Also, his family was about to find out he had a drug addiction, and we knew Maggie was looking to divorce him and stuff. But the financial crimes was what the prosecution said eventually prompted him to shoot them. So I can understand why you would want to bring it in as motive. I agree that like at some point you're oversaturating it. And not only may it go against like a law, but the jury just kind of zones out at some point.
Well, and the jury's like, we get it. He's a piece of shit. We know he's a piece
of
shit. And
then when we get it.
And when he testified, he's like, I did it. I stole all that money. I was the one that stole it and everything. So you're right. It does kind of, the jury glazes over and the key details, which are he did, like, the money was discovered that morning mm-hmm. from his work that he worked with his family. Yeah. Like, the jig was up. He didn't work at some company and maybe he's going to fly under the radar. It's like his brothers and cousins and stuff mm-hmm. work there. And also the whole Mallory Beach lawsuit, he was fixing to have to open his books for that other lawyer yeah. and had, like, ignored the request or whatever. So it was like the walls are closing in. So I think the timing is the key thing to focus on, not like what a nasty, mean mm-hmm. man.
Yeah, we know that he sucked shit for generations. His family had sucked shit and just run that town, which is, I mean, in a small South Carolina town, when you're the richest and most powerful, you think nobody's ever going to touch you or catch you. But that's not how it works. Eventually, it all comes crashing down. And then you do something that you never thought in your wildest years you would be capable of.
You get all jacked up on some whatever and adrenaline and think this is the only way yeah. out.
The court noted its reversal was not a criticism of the trial judge, who never had the chance to intervene because Hill's conduct didn't come to light until months after the verdict. The justices also recognized the incredible amount of time and resources that went into the first trial, but ultimately held that Hill's conduct was so egregious they had no choice but to order a retrial.
You can tell in their the writing that the judges are like, well, this sucks.
Yeah, I mean.
But we have to.
Yeah, nobody wants to do this again. Least of all the attorneys and the judges.
Yeah, it's my understanding that the defense attorneys got paid once and that's it. And they're like, Alec doesn't have any money. Yeah. Like, we took the last, it was a protected account that was like a retirement account that was untainted by any of the money he had stolen from the others. Like, it just like was genuinely his real money. And he was able to use that to pay them. And that's gone now. And so Dick and Jim, to their credit, were like, we take it as like we got paid to do a job and the job is to defend you. And now the job has not finished. And he's like, where we're going to get money to hire experts, I do not know. But hopefully, I think we'll talk about a civil suit. Maybe there's some money to be had from Miss Hill. But, you know, you got to redo all that.
Yeah. Or maybe the slush fund that you gave to Buster to funnel some yeah. money through.
Maybe your son can
maybe
help you.
You're going to ask for some of that back.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. Social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Alec Murdoch seemed pleased at the news, photographed smiling in his orange jumpsuit. He's currently serving life in state prison plus a concurrent federal sentence of 40 years for his financial crimes. As he waits for his retrial, he has also sued the woman responsible for the interference in his first trial. On May 17, 2026, Murdoch filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against Hill. He claimed his 6th and 14th Amendment rights were violated under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, which allows lawsuits against state actors, like elected clerks of court, who violate a plaintiff's constitutional rights. He is seeking $600,000 in compensatory damages, equivalent to the entire cost of his trial defense. He also seeks punitive damages, attorney's fees, and a jury trial. That case is pending. As of this recording, there has not been a date set for a retrial. So what do we think?
Man, oh man, the Dick and Jim were on the Today Show and they said that they think the retrial will be probably early next year. He said probably not before the end of this year that they've got to go through. He said it was 80,000 pages or something like that of transcripts. And he said, we've got to go through all that.
Transcripts and between who?
Of the first trial. You go through and you see like what you did. Damn. What you want to do different, experts, things like that. It's crazy between Karen Reed and this that there's two.
Yeah.
Two different trials for two major national cases, but Buster has not made a public comment through the attorneys. He said he supports his dad. He wants his privacy, but there's still maybe charges against Becky Hill for jury tampering. I kind of wonder if that implicates double jeopardy because she was already, you know, she pleaded guilty to not the felony. That perjury, though, was kind of more on lying about the you know, the crime scene photos. But the sled, I believe, would be the one to investigate the jury tampering, which is, I mean, it's all kind of like they need outside people. It's like that's the problem when you get into this like good old boy network where there's everybody knows everybody and people are wanting to do deals and help each other out, because it seems like there's too many interested parties to have disinterested results.
Yeah, there's a lot of conflicts of interest.
But there's also argument that perhaps the attorney general said, well, maybe we'll seek the death penalty this time.
You have that too. So, I mean, you know, sometimes you wish for something and you would have been better off keeping your mouth shut. Although I don't think he's getting out of prison in his lifetime. If it's for financial crimes, it's sad. If they come back again and say, yes, he's guilty of murder. If it wasn't for the financial crimes and he could walk, if this was overturned, holy shit. I mean, she's already fucked this up beyond words. But if she, like, was the reason he got to walk free, she would need to leave the country and change her name.
No, for sure. Because I think as far as, like, if he's going to get convicted again or not and whether he'll stay in prison, the death penalty thing is, unless there's like new evidence that would have changed why they didn't seek it the first time, why they would seek it the second time. Dick Harpootlian pointed out that would be vindictive prosecution. You can't really do that and just be like, well, we're mad now. And so we're going to make it worse on you. But you're right. I think if he gets acquitted the second time, my question is, do you have a better opportunity to get either a commutation of your sentence, a pardon from someone that you know for a financial crime versus for murder, brutal murder of your wife and son? That's, in my opinion, that's why he doesn't want to be labeled as murderer, because if you need to ask a favor to get, you know, let out of jail, unless, you know, Ken Paxton in Texas let that sex predator, like a literal child molester, out, like gave him like one day in jail, like something like so small. And when it's a, such a harmful thing, like, you know, a crime against a child, this case like patricide, that that is such a reflection on the person that's granting that clemency, it makes you truly question their judgment. And so if Alec was going to go ask that favor, that's like a huge favor to ask versus, hey, like, I was addicted to opioids and like, that's why I stole and my bad. And like, these people got paid back and like, whatever, you know, my assets got sold to pay them back. So can't you just let, like, haven't I suffered enough? Even if he spends like 5 or 10 years in jail, that's not the same as like, you're A, facing the death penalty, which I don't think he will, but B, like life in prison. So I think he's trying to get acquitted of the murders for that. And also if there was any sort of like financial ties to Maggie's estate that he could have recovered under Slayer statutes, don't let the murderer recover under a will for the person that they killed. And so that would be a vital reason that you would want to get this overturned. And I think just the emotional like morality of it is he doesn't want to be labeled as a murderer, but don't kill your family if you don't want to be labeled as a murderer.
Hard truth there. Yeah, I agree with all those. I think it's very important for him on a personal level to be able to say, my name has been cleared, like for Buster and his brothers and the remaining family. I think his reputation among them is just as important as, if he gets, if he stays in prison or not.
Yeah, it's his ego for sure. I wonder how it's this trial is going to be affected. They did say it was 8,000 pages of trial transcript, not 80. But they said between the 8,000 pages of that, and also they have digital scans of Moselle and the dog kennels and like 3D renderings and all the like measurements. But the land has been sold and the kennels have been torn down. So they can never, a jury can never go back there. And that's another thing Becky Hill has stolen, which is a jury that has the best possible set of evidence to make a decision on. And that's what they had, was like in the immediacy thereafter. And like her behavior is the reason why they're not going to have that. But Jim and Dick said they have a new working theory that there's a third party involved. They would not disclose what the potential motives are or who that third party person is. So that'll be interesting to see who they're going to try to like, you know, who they're going to like try to say did it. Yeah. Cause like there's a Snapchat video. So I don't know about all that.
Yeah.
And when asked if he was going to testify again, Jim and Dick were like, we don't know. Like that's his choice. So, but they said under no circumstances will he ever plea ever, because he just said, I did not do it. And you know, you got to prove it. It wasn't me.
And I mean, for him, that was the happiest day of his time behind bars, is when it's like, oh, so I am going to get another bite at the apple. This whole case, it just captivated me from the very beginning, because it's so heart-wrenching to think of a father that's able, or a husband that's able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always, you know, said he wasn't responsible. That Snapchat, which was discovered on like, you know, at the 10th hour,
mm-hmm.
is, I think, the nail in the coffin. If they had not found mm-hmm. that Snapchat, then he could have kept saying, I was not there. The Snapchat, mm-hmm. you cannot argue with it. You see him, you hear his voice. It's like 1 minute before his family's blown away. So if you didn't do it, you certainly had to have been there when someone did.
And I don't think you were upstairs taking, you know, up in the house, you know, 500 yards away taking a nap. I don't think that. So you're right. I'm nervous because there is that video, and I hope that the defense just hammers on that video and hammers on, you know, the timing of the thefts, not the timing of that, but the timing of the reveal of the thefts, you know, like it was that day, mm-hmm. it was imminent. That's why he was on this like heightened emotional feeling. You know, he fakes his own suicide or whatever by the side of the road.
Oh my gosh. That was a whole other thing that chaos. We didn't even discuss in this episode.
But like the reasonable doubt potential is very scary, because Sled fucked up Maggie's phone. You know, the GPS data wasn't preserved. They didn't put it in a Faraday bag. They didn't, you know, put it in airplane mode. And on retrial, it's kind of in favor of the defendant, only because you have an opportunity to impeach the witnesses who testified, you know, in 2023 about something that happened just 2 years earlier. Now it's 2027 mm-hmm. about something that happened 6 years earlier. And it's kind of like with Kieran Reed, where you see the second time that they, you know, McCabe's a little mm-hmm. bit more testy on the stand or nervous on the stand or something, because it's been so long. So then they are kind of like on their back foot, like defensive. So that's what I'm worried about, is that Jim and Dick, for all their flaws, at the end of the day, are competent, good, like they're savvy attorneys mm-hmm. and hardworking attorneys. And that's exactly who you want on your side. If all you need is a little bit of reasonable doubt, and now you have 8,000 possible pages to go through to find reasonable doubt, and you get a second bite at the apple, like, you fucked up, Becky Hill.
Yeah.
You fucked up. And if he does it, if he does get acquitted, it's 1,000% her fault.
Yeah. Yeah, so I hope that lake house that you're not in, because no.
And I also think, you know, now she's being sued for 600 G's by Alec Murdoch, like,
which I'm honestly surprised that I feel like it had to have been more than that.
They said that the 600,000 represents costs, so they want costs and attorney's fees, and also, so I think that the attorney's fees are probably more expensive on top of that too.
Yeah.
But okay. I think the 600K was like expert witnesses, gotcha. And you know, printer paper and all that stuff. So yeah, I think, at the end of the day, they probably want multi-million dollars from her, but that was the number they cited. And then punitive is like, we're all having to fucking waste our time and do this again. And also the attorneys have to be here. So I'll be interested to see because the civil case is a slam dunk, because the question is, did the state actor violate the plaintiff's right under color of law, like at their job? And literally you have liberally quoted throughout the petition for the civil case from the order or the decision from the Supreme Court that says, while as elected official, this lady violated this man's constitutional right. So, I mean, it's like you have a Supreme Court case mm-hmm. that said, yes, it did. So makes it clear why they like immediately filed it, because mm-hmm. they were probably pre-drafted it and were ready.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. And he's also an attorney. I mean, which is probably one of your hardest clients to have, is attorneys trying mm-hmm. to defend other attorneys. And they were all friends. Dick, Jim, Alec, not only were they attorneys that all lived in the same small town and they were the big dogs, they're all mm-hmm. friends. So like, you probably know stuff and you have stuff on each other that predates any of this. So you're like, well, you know what I know. So if you, I think that maybe you don't charge me for stuff this time.
Right. And also, this is huge. Like, it's, you're going to, I mean, not that Dick Harpootlian needs more attention because he was a politician for a long time. He defended Pee Wee Gaskins, who's a serial killer whose last podcast episodes live rent free in my mind. If I think too much about him, I'll throw up. So, you know, he doesn't necessarily need it. But also, if you were like, I don't say it's a career maker, but it's a person that, you know, whether that you have, you're doing it because you like them positively or negatively, they have something on you, but you also just like are going to be on the Today Show a bunch of times.
Yeah, for sure. Oh no.
So suck that, Becky Hill. Dick Harpootlian's the one on the Today Show now.
Oh yeah. He probably already has a lake house, but he'll probably get another one after all of this.
He's got two lake houses.
Well, we hope that yesterday's kind of recap caught you up some. And today, like we said, we have, I think, five different episodes so covering this case and retrials or appeals on our Patreon. So if you want to know everything going back to 2023, then head on over there and you can find out a lot more backstory about this sack of wet shit.
This big old asshole. And shout out to my intern at Legal Aid in 2021, who was the first person that ever texted me about this case. I'd never heard of it before. And she texted like an NBC News article and was like, this seems weird. And it was like early on before the case even, you know, before he was arrested before. And that's when we first did our episode. So, man, how much can change in 5 years?
Truly. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Well, let us know what... what you all think. If you have any things you think we need to see, then, you know, you can always email them to us because we can only do so much research. So it's always appreciative when we get stuff from all of you.
Most definitely. And if you are in South Carolina, especially the Lowcountry, if you practice law, if you're in the justice system at all, and you have any scuttlebutt news, whatever, like, what are people saying about this? Because this is so egregious. Like, this is jaw-dropping behavior. And I would love to hear if someone's, you know, if you have experience that we're like, oh my God, we're shocked. Becky would never do this. Like, out of nowhere, this is crazy. Or if it's like, oh my God, she's always been talking about catching the big fish, whatever it is, we'd love to hear from you. So,
and if she's like out and about, are y'all running into her at the Piggly Wiggly? Is she holed up in her house? Like, I would have left the state, quite honestly.
Dude, checking in at the Holiday Inn, it's like, I guess you don't have a lake house to check into. Anyway, hope you enjoy your stay.
I wouldn't show my face around there if I had done something like this because, like we said up top, this sent shockwaves, not only just through the nation, but especially this small town, especially on the heels of a whole other murder, but manslaughter, I guess, of Mallory Beach involving Paul. So there's and just Stephen so Smith. Much history surrounding this case and this family and a lot of hatred for them. And then if you're the one lady that is responsible for him walking, I think you got to leave. You better go find that lake house somewhere.
Right. It's going to be hard to find a jury, too. Maybe they'll move it somewhere else because it is
true
that I think everybody's got a feeling one way or the other, whether it's like we don't even need to be doing this retrial or like, oh, Alec, he was a good guy to my family. Like, it's going to be hard to find. Hard to find somebody who hasn't watched one of a million docuseries about it, too. So,
well, I'll be watching even more. So if we have another update, we'll have even more information for you. I'm sure we will have several more updates.
100%.
Well, if you like our free episodes like this one, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling can be discussed. And Am I the Asshole, on popular opinions and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
And don't forget, go on Sunday Scaries to get your 50% off 1 month code. But in the meantime, you can do a free trial where you join for a week at any of the tiers, check out the perks, cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged, but use that discount code and then stick around for an annual membership because you get so much.
ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live stream bonus content. We let you all vote on what kind of content you want to see. Weekly audio bonus content like Am I the Asshole? True Crime Headlines, Minisodes. We just dropped one about even more UAP disclosure information, sightings that have recently happened. You get merch discounts and, most importantly, a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. Thank you so much to everyone who has left us 5 stars and such nice things to say. You can submit topics for cases you'd like us to cover, your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday, and whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's totally free. You put in your email address, you get immediate access to the stream, to the chat. You get a whole backlog of content just for signing up for free. And then during Sunday Scaries, we will give you a secret Pee Wee Herman-like code of the day that for 24 hours you can use to get 50% off your first month. And like Heather said, stack all those discounts. Take advantage of all of them.
I love a discount stack, baby. Don't forget, too, you got to go to our website so you can get on Crime Wave, baby.
Crime Wave 2027. Oh, man, I'm looking forward to it now more than ever, and we can't wait to see all of you there in Sunday Scaries. We've had so many people in the chat like, I'm coming on the cruise, and we're so excited. It's a great way, too, to kind of foster even deeper relationships in our little community.
Heck yeah, we're going to get to hang out in person and high five and hug and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Go follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on TikTok and YouTube at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, maybe you just want to treat yourself to a pep talk. Book a cameo now. From happy birthday to birth announcements to congratulations on whatever it is you've accomplished, we would love to create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's a thoughtful gift. It's a custom gift. You don't even have to put your pants on and leave the house to do it. Go to the website www.cameo.com/sinisterhood to get the best price. What websites can people find you on?
Oh man, I don't know that I know all of them.
I don't want to know.
Of the ones I'm aware of, you can find me on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
You can find me on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey everybody, thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts. Kesha Ryden.
PNW Foot Girls.
Sandra F.
Laurel H.
Kelsey Borg.
Alexis Livermore.
And Heather Bavender.
Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you all. We really, really mean that. We hope we pronounced all of your names correctly. We love each and every one of you so very much. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Sinisterhood. I'm gonna kill you.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.